I want to thank you for making the time today to talk with us here in Indianapolis. I'd like to start with some breaking news from Lake Wobegon, and that is that you've said that this next season of the show will be your last. Now, what made you decide that it was time?
What made me decide? Well, I mean, a person has a sense of these things, and it's not easy to explain. I mean, you know, in your heart, you feel, you know, like you're in your late 30s, early 40s. But in fact, I am 72 and about to be 73, and people my age are getting into all sorts of medical adventures, you know, that they had not planned on. And so one tries to be realistic. I mean, I might be able to do the show for another 10 years. I don't know. But there are other things that I need to do. And the show is sort of a luxury, you know, to be able to stand out on stage and sing duets and tell stories and tell jokes is really kind of a luxurious way of life for an English major. I only wanted to ever be a writer, and I've been putting that off now for 40 some years, and I feel that I need to get back to it. I want to get around the country and see things. You know, I've been so many places and I've seen so little. I've seen hotels and I've seen airports and the backstages of theaters, which all look pretty much the same. And I'd like to see the country, which means riding the train, which you can't do if you have an itinerary and you need to be someplace at a specific time. All those things. I want to do another movie. It's been 9 years since I did a movie with Robert Altman, and it was great fun, and I want to do this one more time. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer to your question.
If I may ask, how is your health?
It's good. It's good. I'm bouncing right along, thanks to people at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, who are really, you know, great about keeping track of us older people.
Chris Thiele, who's a mandolinist with the Punch Brothers and Nickel Creek, mm-hmm. It plans to take over hosting of the show next year. Could you give us some ideas of what changes might be in store for the show, given that he's first and foremost a musician and you are a writer and a storyteller?
He's going to take the show, I believe, back to its roots. It started out as a musical variety show back in the summer of 1974. I started the show with a whole troupe of acoustic musicians who are very tuned into old-timey string band music and American folk music in general. And gradually, the breadth of the music grew, and then we started to add the news from Lake Wobegon. We added sketch comedy. Eventually, the radio detective Guy Noir came in, the Cowboys Dusty and Lefty, and we had other series that took place, and sponsors, the Ketchup Advisory Board and Powder Milk Biscuits and all. All of these things came along afterward. And I think the healthiest thing for the show is to go back to where it started out as a music show, a live music show on Saturday evening, and then develop its own comedic style. I'm 72, almost 73. And so my idea of comedy is, of course, dated. And these new people, much younger people, will be coming in and doing the show, and they need to develop their own style and their own ideas, and I'm there to encourage them to do that.
You know, as a listener to the show, I was really charmed by him, and I thought he was really a wonderful presence. And I'm wondering, too, if part of the reason that you feel comfortable stepping away from the show now is that you say, ah, here's someone who is, who I can put the show in good hands.
He is. He's good hands. He's a genius, for one thing, a musical genius. But he's a musical genius who, unlike some other bright people I know, is really an idealist, an enthusiast. I have never seen anyone who could be so wildly enthusiastic about other people and their music as Chris Thiele. He's a good person. He comes from a similar sort of odd background that I do. He comes from Southern California, but he comes from a sort of fundamentalist evangelical background, which he's developed from there. And he's, he's had interesting adventures in life. But now he's married, and he and his wife Claire just had a baby, a little boy named Calvin. And I think he's ready for this. He's had the road life, the Punch Brothers, very successful band and a terrific band. And I think now he's ready to do something else. And this is it. I think he's really perfect for this.
I was just telling some colleagues before we started talking that I've been a fan of his music. In fact, I still vividly recall hearing his first recording. I think he made it when he was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The cover of it is a picture of him in his like Little League uniform. He's standing mm-hmm. out on a baseball field, swinging yeah. his mandolin like a bat, and he's just this sort of chubby cheeked adolescent. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly charming.
Yeah.
And You did leave the show for a time in the 1980s, and then you came back in 1992. And you've talked before about stepping aside, so much so that the Minneapolis Star Tribune dubbed you the Brett Favre of public radio. I wonder, does that comparison irritate you at all?
No, I didn't realize I had brought up the subject before. I only have brought it up when people have asked me about it, and those people are reporters, for the Star Tribune and elsewhere. People, when you get to be a certain age and you've been doing one thing for a long time, they say, "How long are you going to keep on doing this?" And they're paid to ask impolite questions, and if you make the mistake of answering it and saying, "Well, I don't know, a couple more years," then this is reported as your plan to retire. So that's how I became the Brett Favre of public radio.
How did you break?
Which in Minnesota is not a great compliment.
No,
you have to understand.
That's right. No, it's not.
No.
It's not. Well, how did you break the news to the people of Lake Wobegon? I'm wondering about that.
Ha, 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 ha. Oh, you clever person, you. I haven't told them yet, of course.
What?
Because I believe they can exist without me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All of them. They will now have their own lives, and I wish them well.
Aside from the stage shows, you also do the America the Beautiful tour, and that is coming mm-hmm. to the Indiana State Fair in Indianapolis here on the 12th of August.
Mm-hmm.
What opportunities do these shows offer you as an artist that the stage shows don't, the Prairie Home Companion programs?
A Prairie Home Companion is a live radio broadcast, and so each week's show is different, and we very, very seldom repeat anything that we've done before. But the summer tour, the America the Beautiful tour, coming to the state fair, gives you the chance to do the same show 30 times. And this is a fabulous luxury. After you've done it two or three times, you get into a groove with it. And it is now possible for you to enjoy your own work standing there in front of an audience, which is, you believe, enjoying it too. But you're able to do the show without that slight panic that you have for a Saturday broadcast when you're trying to think of the words. You're able to enjoy the show yourself.
What do you hope will be the enduring legacy of A Prairie Home Companion under your leadership?
There is no enduring legacy in radio. Everything is gone the moment you are done with it. And that's why I need to get back to being a writer, because writers, have some slight legitimate hope for something enduring. I don't think that my novels will endure. I don't think my newspaper columns will endure. I don't think the movie I made with Altman will endure. But I believe that some of my limericks will endure, and that 10 and 12-year-old boys decades from now will cherish them briefly, because a limerick is short. It's just five lines. But I think that I think this is true. I used to do avant-garde dance with a blowtorch, blue paint, and no pants, which some people guessed was genius, and the rest left quickly when given the chance. I think that limericks like that, and the young couple named Kelly, who were found lying belly to belly because in their haste they used library paste instead of petroleum jelly, will last.
I don't doubt it.
I hope I haven't offended you.
Oh, no, not at all.
All right, okay.
Very difficult to offend me. Have you written a limerick about your retirement?
Yes, I have. I've decided I want to resign. I am not, after all, 69. I want to retrench a few steps ere dementia, and I'd like the idea to be mine.
Thank you. Do you have any regrets? Have you left anything undone that you wish you had done?
In my life?
With the show. Well, I don't know that we have time to get into regrets in your life, but I certainly wouldn't mind hearing about them, but I was wondering particularly about the show.
The show, yes. I think that there was a period, and I'm going to say it was in the 90s. I think there was a period when I was coasting, and I took this much too much for granted. I, of course, regret having shut down the show back in 87. It was a mistake, and I have regretted that thousands of times, usually late at night before I fall asleep. But when it came back, I think I took it much too much for granted, and I didn't work hard enough to make it fun. I was really phoning it in, and I really am sorry about that. And I humbly apologize, and I promise to do better in the future.
How did you recover? It's interesting that you say that, and now it makes me wonder what it is you did, or how it is you recovered your momentum after after that period of coasting, after what you describe as coasting?
I think you recover it by going to see other people perform, and this gives you, this really is can be inspiring. I remember going to see Lily Tomlin do The Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe when it was on Broadway, and that was probably in the late 80s, I'm guessing now. And I was in New York, and I'd gone to work at the New Yorker, and I saw her show, and that was just hugely inspiring. She was superhuman on stage. I lived for a while in Copenhagen, and I went to see plays outdoors in a garden. And even though I was just learning Danish and couldn't follow all of the dialogue, the playfulness of the acting and the joyfulness of the performance came through, and I was really moved by that. I went to see Springsteen do his solo show. He did a solo show just playing guitar and some at keyboard in rock and roll arenas, 8, 10, 12,000 people, and one man at a microphone. And I found that to be really astonishing. I went to see Simon and Garfunkel on their, cosmic, galaxy tour, doing all of their old hits in the original keys and doing them perfectly in a three-hour performance with fabulous sound. And that was stunning, especially to somebody who had heard them the first time round.
One last question, and I will let you go. I want to say thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. Will you continue to do the Writer's Almanac? This is a personal favorite of mine. I love the Writer's Almanac. So I'm wondering, will you continue to do the Almanac?
Oh, sure. No, I want to do the Almanac. I want to have this adventure of looking through books of poetry that may be, bought by 300, 400, 500 people, and finding poems in there that I can read to a couple million people, and I don't know what good it does for the poet. I have no idea, but it's good for. It's good for people. I read poems that you can get that will come through to you, even if you hear them early in the morning and you're not fully awake and there are people harassing you. Nonetheless, you'll be able to get this poem. I believe in clarity in poetry, and so I want to keep on doing that. I can do that in my spare time.